Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So that game last night, Bills-Titans, it can be summed up in one single play. Even if it was a play that never actually happened. Offsetting penalties may have wiped that play from the score sheet, but it is not erased from our collective mental hard drive. Because when you see something like this, you can never unsee it. Even if it did not go into the books as an official play last night. It didn't have to. You snatch somebody's soul like that, and it's never forgotten, whether it counts in the game or not. Because that bleep counts in life. And in terms of summing up that game itself, I don't even need the entire play. It can be summed up in a single image. The image of Derrick Henry abusing Josh Norman. It's the photo that Derrick Henry put up on Instagram after the game where Norman is in the air, horizontal, like he's lying on a couch after Henry destroyed him. I mean, you look at that pic and you wonder, is that photoshopped? Because there's no way that somebody can do that to a man who is 6 feet tall and weighs 200 pounds. But then you see the actual play itself, and then you become a believer.
Tannehill, he almost got the jump. Yes, he did. He gives it to Henry. Henry trying to get to the outside. Shows the defender, Josh Norman, to his backside.
Come in against Derrick Henry. You better go low. Do not stand up with that man and let him just throw you out of the club.
Watch the reaction from the sideline.
Well, listen to the crowd. It's not a big crowd, but they're fired up.
It's incredible. Again, that was not just a stiff arm. That was a soul destruction. Ryan Tannehill saw that and reacted thusly.
I screamed, holy crap. That was unbelievable just to see the way he tossed that guy. That was probably one of the meanest stiff arms I've ever seen, no doubt.
Quote, I screamed, holy crap. It was unbelievable just to see how he tossed that guy. Henry himself was asked about it. Here's what he had to say.
I've been doing too many curls. So I got to lay off the arms.
Quote, I've been doing too many curls, so I got to lay off the arms. Yeah, you do. You do need to lay off the arms, D. Not for you, but for everybody else. I mean, that stiff arm is filthy and immediately launched about 1,000 memes. You could take that still image of Norman getting shoved into the center of the earth and attach anything you want to it. You know, like Norman is your diet and Henry is finishing off a cake at 11 p.m. Norman is your plan to only have one beer, and Henry is you heading to the fridge for number six. Norman is your plan to go to bed early, and Henry is Netflix, starting your next episode of the series that you're binging on. There's a million of them. Like, if you don't know by now, and I don't know how you wouldn't know by now, but if you do not know by now, here is a very simple fact. You cannot go high on Derrick Henry. You got to go low. If you go high on him, he will humiliate and meme the hell out of you. Go low and you've got a chance of getting him down and maintaining your pride and your dignity. I mean, the question is, have you ever seen a better stiff arm than that one? And it's an almost impossible question to answer because Henry himself has given us so many. There was that one against Earl Thomas only a few months back.
Hand off Henry. Henry takes it to the outside. Oh, the stiff arm twice on Thomas, and he's out of bounds. First down run.
That's true. That was actually two stiff arms. That was kind of like my man Nathan. With the stiff arms. Hey, Earl, I got something for you. But then again, I'm not even sure that was the best. There were the two stiff arms on his 99-yard TD run against Jacksonville back in 2018.
Starts at the one and looking for a little breathing room, and they get that and plenty more. Derrick Henry stays in bounds. He might go. 99 yards. Unbelievable. Boy, he just threw Poirier away right there.
Like, he might be the very best to ever do it, but he's not the only one who's got that in his tool chest. He's not the only one with that in his arsenal. For instance, in the non-Henry category, there is the nastiness that Steeler Vance McDonald perpetrated against Tampa Bay 2 years back.
Third and 10. Easy first down, Vance McDonald, and he keeps his footing. Wow. Can he get there? 75-yard touchdown.
Are you kidding me?
Wow. He just ran over Chris Conte.
What a stiff arm.
Super filthy as well. And not just the stiff arm, but the fact that McDonald stepped over what was left of the body of that defender and just kept right on running. Like, I'm not here to tell you which stiff arm was the best. And I'm sure as hell not going to do a poll where you call in or tweet your responses. But there is no debate. The stiff arm is the best move in football. The stiff arm might be the best move in all of sports. Hell, I'd argue the stiff arm might be the best move in all of life. Like, you can have your jukes, your spins, even your hurdles. I'm going to take the stiff arm all day, every day. Like, I could do an entire segment talking about that stiff arm. I could do an entire show talking about that stiff arm. And I'm guessing if I did that, you Bills fans would be pretty happy, because that would mean that I'm not talking about your team. I'm not talking about their implosion last night. Except if I do that, I'm not being responsible. I'm not doing my job. Bills Mafia, we have to talk about what happened last night. Or more specifically, about what didn't happen last night. And what you are. Or better yet, what you thought you were. And what you're actually not. Like, I thought everything was going to be different this year. I thought that everything had changed. I thought this was the year. Not only the year that you finally ripped the AFC East from the Pats. Not only the year where you made the playoffs, but you got there and you made a deep run. The year where you were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. All right, so where the hell were those guys last night? Who the hell were those guys last night? Because the guys that I saw looked like the New York Jets rolled in, threw on Bills jerseys, and then got worked. The point's been made a million times already, but if you watched that game last night, you would not have known which team had been locked out of their facility. The final score was 42-16. It wasn't even that close. Didn't even feel that close. That was not a loss. That was a nationally televised humiliation. And yes, I know Buffalo was missing some key starting players. I know that it was completely jacked up that they had to wait in limbo to find out about that game, when it was going to be played, who they were going to play. But you know what else I know? The Titans had one official practice since September 27th. One. Like, for all that talk about Henry Stiffarm, he only had 57 yards rushing. He averaged 3 yards a carry. It was Ryan Tannehill who was dishing out the real punishment to the Bills. He had 3 TD passes, and he had another one rushing. And Buffalo had no answer for either Tannehill or A.J. Brown, who had 7 receptions for 82 yards and this touch.
Tannehill, with pressure coming, throws it deep down the right side, left side, and that is into the end zone. It is caught. It's a touchdown. A.J. Brown.
You know who else they had no answer for? Jonnu Smith.
Drops, throws on a slant. Jonnu Smith with the catch and a touchdown. Just a quick slant from left to right, and Jonnu Smith with his 4th touchdown.
My man, Jonnu, he is a problem, right? He was a problem on that play, and he was a problem on this play.
Play action, Tannehill on the bootleg. Tannehill throws to the end zone. It's Jonnu Smith with the touchdown.
My guy likes to say that the weight room is free. Yes, so were those touchdowns. But it wasn't just about what the Bills defense couldn't do. And didn't I touch on this yesterday before the game? I mentioned the defense was an issue, and it was last night. But it wasn't only about what the defense didn't do. It was about what the defense did do, namely commit a bunch of penalties. Also about what the offense did do, turn the ball over. 10 penalties. 3 turnovers, and they picked a really bad time to have a really bad night, and nobody had to tell that to their head coach, Sean McDermott.
Uncharacteristic game for us. Uncharacteristically poor fundamentals, poor pre-snap discipline, turn the ball over. You can't do that. There's only one opponent. That opponent's on the other sideline. You can't beat yourself. And again, I give them credit. They were ready to go, and at the same time that we beat ourselves.
Coach speak for, we played like crap. Like Josh Allen, what happened to him? He had played at an MVP level through the first 4 games, and then he smashed right back to earth last night. Josh, the hell happened to you and the rest of them? Quote, we got punched in the mouth and didn't respond like we should have. I didn't play well enough for our team to win tonight. End quote. Yes and yes. Man, that is so true. They got bullied by a bigger bully. Last night was Tennessee, not Buffalo, who looked crisp and sharp. It was Tennessee, not Buffalo, who looked like a Super Bowl contender. It was Ryan Tannehill, not Josh Allen, who looked like he was about to dominate the division Tom Brady style for a long time. Buffalo could not get much of a pass rush going. Hell, they couldn't get anything at all going. Now, the good news is they've got a short week to get that disgusting taste out of their mouth. The bad news is the short week ends with Kansas City on Sunday. And if they show up Sunday the way they showed up last night, it's going to be even more humiliating. They were looking to send a statement. They were looking to send a message. Unfortunately, they did. Message being same as they ever were. Still not ready for prime time. They better hope that that was only one bad night. Because what that was a gigantic step backwards. Bills Mafia. The hell you got to say for yourself now? If you're a business owner, you do not need me to tell you that running a business is rough. You know this, but you might be making it tougher on yourself than necessary. Do not let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down any longer. It is time for you to upgrade to NetSuite. Listen to me. Stop paying for multiple systems that do not give you the information that you need when you need it. Man, ditch the spreadsheets and all that old software that you've outgrown that is so outdated. Upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, your HR, your inventory, your e-commerce, and everything you need all in one place instantaneously. So whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, you need to save time and money, and you can do so with NetSuite. Join the over 21,000 companies that are using and loving NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Rome. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Rome, netsuite.com/ROME. He is Frank Vogel. Frank, it is so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
Jim Rome, how you doing? I'm well.
Frank Vogel, it is so good to hear your voice, and it's great to have you back. Let me ask you first, you describe winning that championship as, quote, the greatest feeling in the world. How would you describe, Frank, the initial feeling, and then a couple of days later, has it fully sunk in yet?
Yeah, you just mentioned it about the initial feeling. It was euphoric, and, you know, that's from a professional career standpoint and a basketball competitor standpoint. You know, it's the top of the mountain. It's just the most incredible feeling in the world. So really excited to be able to get there. I don't think it's really sunk in yet. You know, we're not going to have a parade, it looks like. So I think that could have been the moment where, it all starts to sink in. But, right now it's just we're just taking it in stride and really happy with the accomplishment.
Lakers head coach Frank Vogel is joining us once again. You know, Frank, with respect to this, and I understand that it hasn't fully sunk in yet, but as you look back on that championship and you look back on that playoff run, what are the types of moments and memories that jump out to you the most, at least at this point?
You know, I think there was a lot of steps along the way where our team continued to work together and grow, in particular in the film room, you know, where obviously you present a plan for the team at the beginning of the year, and you know it's going to be tweaked throughout the year and improved upon, and all those moments of collaboration with the players about the way, you know, the right way to tie the strings together and tighten things up on the court, you know, and then just seeing it all come together in just winning these games, you know, I think those are the moments I remember the most.
We're talking to Lakers head coach Frank Vogel. You know, after winning it all, you said LeBron, quote, is the greatest player the basketball universe has ever seen. And if you think you know, you don't know, okay? And so you're around him every day. You're coaching him. You're seeing his mind. You're seeing his adjustments. You're seeing the way he leads the group, end quote. So let me ask you this in the form of a question, Frank. What's it like to be around him every day? And what did you see that maybe you had not seen from him before?
Well, just the intelligence and the intellectual factor of what he brings to the table. You know the physical dominance that he has, and you always know he's got a mind for the game from competing against him. And obviously, he's the most documented, well documented player of the last generation. But, you know, to see him behind the scenes talking about, coverages and, offensive spacing and, just the way we're going to play, contributing on a daily basis, really as a great partner. He just has an unbelievable feel for the game of basketball and what creates winning basketball. And, the ability to impact our team with his mind, not just on a particular play, but with the development of a team. I mean, this team, we had three players on our roster last summer, like three players, and it all gets put together with a new coaching staff. And, for him to be a great partner with myself throughout the course of the year and building this thing, combined with the fact that he's able to go out at 35 years old and dominate the way he did and lead the league in assists for the first time in his career, it just gave me a whole new perspective of, what I already knew was a great player. Just seeing it from this lens, it just changed it all for me.
Lakers head coach Frank Vogel is joining us. Frank, I'm going to go back to your point in a moment that you just made, because I think that's really astonishing that you had three guys on that roster previously. But when we're talking about players and guys having amazing minds for the game, somebody else who comes to mind is Rajon Rondo. I mean, watching him and watching him do what he did in the bubble was amazing. What is it about him that makes him so special and so unique?
Well, there's a lot of similarities to what I just said about LeBron, his mind, his ability to see the game and, not only see it, but I've always felt that about Rondo, that he was just a step ahead of everybody else mentally on the floor. Like, even when he was a rookie or a second year player with the Boston Celtics, playing with the big three, you always felt like, as talented as those guys were, that Rondo was the engine. And, you saw that play out at different spots throughout his career. Obviously he bounced around the last 2 years, but, his ability to bring what he brings to our team this year was just a huge factor in us winning the championship this year.
Frank, it seems to me it's one thing to have a bunch of new faces and then try to get everybody on the same page, especially in the midst of a global pandemic. But then when you think about the guys in question, for instance, there was that perception at one point that Rondo was not the easiest guy to coach. Dwight Howard had that reputation as well. Then you have Dion Waiters and you have J.R. Smith. I mean, guys who also allegedly were not the easiest guys to coach, and yet you were able to make all of this work, and from the outside, it seemed like the team chemistry was amazing. How would you explain that? How did that all come together?
Well, I think it starts with our player leadership, the tone that Anthony and LeBron set with their relationship with each other. Just sets an example for the way the rest of the guys should behave. And, just discredit my coaching staff and my whole approach to coaching is it begins with relationship building and trust. And, you mentioned a lot of those guys have in the past been difficult to coach. I took it upon myself to make sure that was the top priority with all those guys to build those relationships before we even – really started getting into all the X's and O's of basketball, to establish a relationship on a personal level. So I think those two factors, the relationship building of myself and my coaching staff, combined with the example that LeBron and Anthony set for, what we're trying to get accomplished here, really just allowed for a successful team chemistry, that was a big strength of ours in the bubble.
We're talking to Frank Vogel, the head coach of the LA Lakers, and we'll do so for a few more moments. Frank, there was the pandemic, and then there was the bubble, but also the passing of Kobe Bryant. And from the outside, it seemed like Kobe and his spirit were at the center of this team. How would you describe how you and the team have dealt with his passing?
Yeah, well, we're all still devastated, and on different levels. That some had deeper personal relationships with him. Obviously the Lakers family that I just joined last year was with him for 20-plus years, and it's still very hard to believe for all of us that he's not with us, that Gigi's not with us. But you could see and feel, I should say probably more feel, throughout this whole run, his presence with us. There was just multiple steps along the way that just made us all believe that he was with us in spirit and guiding us through this very, very difficult season. And, you know, ultimately to the championship.
Frank, let me ask you this before you go. You and I have talked in the past, and we talked about your time in Kentucky working with Rick Pitino and how formative that was because, among other things, you learned about preparation, but you also learned how to coach elite players. Pitino knew that you would be perfect for LeBron, quote, because LeBron is going to know whether you know your stuff or not, end quote. So I'm kind of curious, how much did those early days at Kentucky prepare you for your entire NBA career and, in particular, this experience?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing that sticks out with that question is you know, the guys that we had there, Antoine Walker, Tony Duck, Ron Mercer, you know, these guys were the biggest names in college basketball at the time, and they were coached very, very hard by Coach Pitino at Kentucky.
Right.
There was a perception that it was all roses and positivity and all that stuff, and there was that, but they were pushed and coached extremely hard. And, you know, I think that was an early lesson in my career that, you know, that's the best way to get the most out of people is, you know, the great players always want to be coached hard and held to a high standard. And, you know, I carried that throughout my career, and this job with the Lakers was no different.
Hey, Frank, one last thought. I mean, you're not going to make it about you. You never have. You never will. But LeBron kind of did. In fact, what he said during a rather unusual time for the organization, since you were hired at an unusual time, during the trophy presentation, LeBron made a point, and he was emphatic when he said, quote, "We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Our coach wants his respect." And again, I know you're not going to make it about you, Frank, but is there any part of you that wants to say, okay, how about that? How about a little respect? How do you like me right now?
Yeah, I mean, it really isn't what drives me, but there is a little bit of an element of fuel when anybody doubts you as a competitor, you know, that you want to prove them wrong. And, you know, obviously this is my third coaching job. So, you know, I think all of us, like you said, Rob, LeBron, our whole team, you know, everybody finds ways to put a chip on their shoulder to carry an edge in this competitive environment. And I would say it's no different with me.
He is the LA Lakers head coach. First season with the team, he is a two-time head coach of the All-Star Game, and he led them to a world championship. That makes 17 for the Lakers. Frank, we had to wait out that bubble. Everybody did. You took care of your business. So good to have you on this show, especially so quickly after emerging from the bubble. I appreciate you. I appreciate the conversation, and congratulations to you, Frank.
I appreciate it, Jim. Take care.
He is a friend of the show. He is Jeffrey Chadiha. Jeffrey, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How about yourself?
Good, dude. Good. Really good to have you back. Thank you so much. Let me start with last night's game, Jeffrey. What was your reaction as to how the Titans showed up after going so long without so much as even a practice? How did they look to you last night?
They looked physical. They looked good. I mean, I was stunned. I thought they would get run over by the Buffalo Bills because of what you just said. The team not practicing that much and having all those issues. You hear coaches talk about distractions and all that stuff, and they had a million of them. But somehow they came out and they were very physical. And I think I heard afterwards that Ryan Tannehill was saying that they were upset about the way they were getting treated in the media and things were being said about their COVID-19 outbreak. But what you saw was a team that is still very dangerous. And look, that stiff arm that Derrick Henry put on Josh Norman, I haven't seen something like that since I was watching Patrick Swayze back in Roadhouse. You know, when he just kind of manhandling people back in those days. So it looked good.
Man, you're so right. Jeffrey Chadiha is joining us. They did look good. They were physical. They played with a big chip on their shoulder, and they look great. Now, what about Buffalo? Where does that leave them? Like, they were in that strange limbo situation when it came to whether or not that game was going to be played, whether or not they should be preparing to face Kansas City. I mean, certainly not ideal, but how bad of a night, how bad of a performance was that for the Bills?
Well, that was tough for them, but I give them a little bit of a pass just because of their injury situation. When you go into a game like that without a Pro Bowl cornerback like Tre'Davious White, a deep threat like John Brown, Zach Moss, a pretty good running back who was out. They had linemen, other linebackers were hurt. They had like four or five starters who didn't play in that game. I think it's tough to beat a team like Tennessee on the road with the way Tennessee was playing. But I like Buffalo still. And I think I just watched the Chiefs get manhandled by the Raiders, and it makes you realize good teams lose in this league. But you look at the way Josh Allen's playing. Didn't show it last night, but I think he's taken a big step. And what they have around him on offense, what they have on defense, I think that team is certainly by the end of the year going to be pretty good.
Jeffrey Chadiha is joining us. All right, so let me jump ahead to the game that you just mentioned. You covered Vegas KC over the weekend. What did you make of how the Raiders showed up in that game?
Impressive. And I was one of those people who thought when John Gruden showed up in Oakland a couple years ago or 3 years ago that he was just going to get paid a lot of money and have a really bad run and it'd be the end of it. And what he showed was that he and Mike Mayock, the GM there, put together a pretty good plan. You look at what they put around Derek Carr with Darren Waller, Josh Jacobs, Henry Ruggs, now a deep threat, a really good offensive line, and look at what they added in, on defense. It hadn't shown up that much before a couple days ago, but they've got some pretty good pieces in the back seven, the linebackers, and so they look faster, and they look like they're more committed, and they look like they believe in what John Gruden is saying. So people keep saying the Chiefs had a bad day and didn't come to play and underestimated them. I look at it like John Gruden's got that team going in the right direction.
You know, I tend to see it the same way as you. I thought that when Gruden showed up, I thought he would show up, take that paycheck, and really not make that big of a difference and maybe even hurt them more than he helps them. But that's not the case. I'll go back to the Chiefs in a minute, but you mentioned Derek Carr. Like, Derek Carr had lost all six times that he had played in Kansas City. But as you point out, he outplayed Patrick Mahomes on Sunday. It feels like, Jeffrey, it was not that long ago, there was all that talk about Gruden and Carr. Carr's days were numbered, that he was not going to be a Gruden guy. How much has that all changed since then?
Yeah, I think that was like 3 weeks ago.
Right.
It wasn't that long ago. I think it's changing quickly. And what John Gruden and again, Mike Mayock are proving is that, look, not every quarterback's going to be Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson. You're going to have to put people around them to make them play better. And so what I just said, when you see the supporting cast he has around him, Derek Carr didn't have those kind of players when he was coming into Arrowhead Stadium the six times before this past weekend. He didn't have them for most of his career. But when you see what they've done, and I think what they've also gotten rid of, I think when they traded Khalil Mack, people were laughing at them for what they did. People looked at the Antonio Brown trade was a disaster, but they got out of it fast. And so, again, those personnel moves have helped give Derek Carr the kind of support he needs. He's a good enough quarterback to win games with, and you're seeing that now with what he's doing.
Jeffrey Chidiha is joining us. So, Jeffrey, what about the Chiefs? Like, where does that leave them? For instance, as you just said, good teams get beat. This is not unusual. Good teams do lose in that league, and you don't want to overreact to only one loss. But as you look at Kansas City and the fact that they may have lost to the Patriots if Cam Newton did play, does it feel like there are a number of teams in the AFC that can take them down?
I thought that way a couple weeks ago when they played the Patriots. And I came away thinking what you just said, that if Cam Newton's playing that game, they end up losing. And I think there's two things happening with the Chiefs that should be of concern. One is that I think they've always had issues at cornerback, and they just weren't getting exposed the way they got exposed against the Raiders. But those plays the Raiders hit, they were there when they played Baltimore. They were there when they played the Patriots. They were there in the Super Bowl when Jimmy Garoppolo missed Emmanuel Sanders running wide open down the middle of the field in the fourth quarter. It's just that those quarterbacks didn't hit them. And so they got to find a way to shore up the back end of their secondary. And then the other part of it is that their offensive line isn't as good as it was a couple of last year. And so now they're not running the football well when people are playing them to, you know, basically putting everyone in coverage, rushing three or four guys and just saying, okay, we'll spy Mahomes and we'll see what happens. And it's what the Patriots did. It's what the Raiders did. And it's working.
We are talking to Jeffrey Chidiha. It is working. And then you think, all right, so maybe they're not the team to beat. Why don't we go to the next team? Maybe the Ravens. They're 4-1. All four of their wins have been blowouts. But, of course, that one loss was that 14-point loss at home to Kansas City. Like, how much of a mark did that loss to Kansas City leave? And is it hard to consider them legitimate AFC contenders until they get over that mental block, which is Kansas City?
Yeah, well, I still believe Kansas City is the best team in the league and the best team in the AFC. But, yeah, I think the Ravens learned that as well. And, unfortunately for them, they went into that game with I liken it to when Tommy Hearns fought Marvin Hagler back in when I was a kid, and Tommy Hearns tried to knock out Marvin Hagler. It was like a slugfest, and it wasn't a great strategy. And I think that's what the Ravens, how they approached the Chiefs, was like, we're going to throw our best punches at you and see what happens. And they saw what happened. They got ran out of the building. And so I think if they had a second chance at that, at the Chiefs, they would look at what the Chargers did, the Raiders, the Patriots, and use that game plan, because you're not going to blitz Patrick Mahomes and overwhelm them and win the game. You're going to have to control him and find a way to make some plays. And they got to find a way to have Lamar Jackson get back to being a guy who wants to make plays, as opposed to proving to people that he's a great drop back passer.
Dude, Tommy Hearns standing directly in front of Marvin Hagler and trying to fight that fight. Man, that was one of the most amazing things ever. It was not that smart. Tactically, that was not good. But, man, that was some Kronk gym stuff. That was Tommy Hearns. That's that was right. Detroit, man. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to blow this guy out the way I've blown everybody else out. It's like one of the most amazing That's things, right?
That's right. Jericho juice flying all over the place as a result, man. He was getting knocked. He got knocked out. It was a great three minutes of boxing.
Oh, one of the best ever.
Tommy Hearns. It wasn't good for him in the end.
Jeffrey Chidiha joining us. I'm glad you used that as an analogy. Always good to reset that. So after that game against Kansas City, Lamar Jackson called KC, quote, our kryptonite. Jimmy Smith said, quote, they have our number. I mean, like, where do you come out on that? Do you like the honesty, or is that not something that a team should admit publicly about another team?
I think it's good for them because I would imagine that the way last year ended for them after going 14-2, a 12-game winning streak, you know, top seed in the AFC playoffs and you get beat by Tennessee, I'm sure they felt like we ruined a great opportunity to win a championship here. Now they know that if the Chiefs had played, then they probably would have gotten beaten in that game. And so they've got, for my money, the best roster in the league. They got a ton of talent. But I think that when they play the Chiefs, what ends up happening is they try to do things that they think they have to do to beat the Chiefs. And they get away from what they do well. But just as I said, I'm watching Lamar Jackson dropping back and, you know, their first drive, they go right down the field running the football. And then the last two plays of the drive, they're trying to throw it in the end zone. And it's just, I watched them play the Redskins the next week and Lamar Jackson's running for a 50-yard touchdown. I'm just like, why aren't you trying to do that against the Chiefs? So I think that if they really are being honest with themselves, and it sounds like they are, they'll recognize that they have to play the Chiefs differently if they want to beat them.
All right, so one more thought about that. I mean, obviously, it's about the matchup, and it's about the Chiefs, but is any of this, the struggles that the Ravens are having, is any of this about a struggle to deliver in the spotlight when the pressure and the attention are at their highest? Is it at all about that?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, they're starting to feel like the Houston Rockets in the NBA, where it's like they put up a lot of good numbers, they're really flashy in how they play, but when they get into a big playoff series, they don't show up. And I think you look at they're 0-3 against the Chiefs since Mahomes been a starter. They lost the Titans in the playoffs last year. They lost the year before, which I give them a little bit of a pass when they lost to the Chargers because Lamar Jackson, his first year as a starter, and they're running a makeshift offense, but they have to find a way to get a signature win. And those signature wins mean beating the best teams in the league in really high-magnitude situations.
Hey, Jeffrey, one thought before you go about Dak Prescott. You could see the kind of respect and love there was for him in the way the league and his peers reacted when he was injured. If you had to guess, I mean, the Cowboys obviously have three different ways they can handle this. They can franchise tag him again. They can extend him and do that long-term deal, or they could let him walk as a free agent. We have to wait and see how he responds to surgery. But if you had to guess, how do you think that thing plays out?
Well, I think if you're the Cowboys, you have to give a lot of thought to drafting a quarterback just as a security blanket. I mean, just not knowing how it's going to play out, what kind of quarterback he's going to be when he comes back, how long it's going to take. That team's built to win right now. And so they have all the pieces in place. I mean, the defense hasn't shown up, but they've spent a lot of money, got a lot of big name players. So I think you have to do that, but you also have to give him an opportunity to come back and prove to the team that he can still be the quarterback they expected him to be. You know, I thought it was very emotional. It was a very emotional roller coaster for me watching football on Sunday when you see Alex Smith playing in Washington, and on the same day, Dak Prescott, you know, tears his ankle up in a very similar type of situation. But if Dak Prescott can look at Alex Smith and see what he's done, and hopefully not go through what Alex Smith went through, hopefully it's a great comeback story for him as well.
Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Don't make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why? Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef very seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Like, who wants dried out, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who want to shake things up. Next time you want to grab a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Be sure to look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name, because no other beef jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Covering the World Series on site for MLB Network. John, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, my friend, always love the conversations, and thanks for the invitation to be on the show today.
Thank you for saying yes once again. I always look forward to it, John. Thank you. So when the Dodgers announced that Clayton Kershaw, John, was going to miss his start last night because of back spasms, you made the point that it was really important that Tony Gonsolin pitch reasonably deep into the evening. What were you thinking then as you watched him go 1-2-3 in the first three innings?
Well, early on, Jim, I thought his stuff was very sharp, but eventually we saw the fact that he had not thrown a competitive pitch in 17 days. And as brilliantly as the Dodgers played throughout the first couple series, I think there was a toll there on the fact that Gonsolin didn't get involved. And so because of the Kershaw injury, they had to go to Gonsolin in Game 2, and his resume this year was sparkling. But as the game wore on, the Braves' at-bats got better, and Gonsolin just didn't quite have the feel for his full repertoire to make the adjustments and give the Braves hitters a different look on the second time through the lineup. So that's really when he got stung. Interesting right now, Jim, that you'd think about the Dodger rotation. The only starting pitcher on the staff to record an out in the postseason in the sixth inning or later is Kershaw himself. And he's not due to come back in the rotation because of the back spasms until Game 4 at the earliest. Best case scenario, because of course Urias goes here in Game 3. So the Dodgers, Jim, they were my pick at the start of this series. I still believe they can get back in it, but nothing has gone according to plan so far for the Dodgers in this NLCS.
John Morosi is joining us once again. That's an amazing fact that you just laid out. What about Freddie Freeman? Then comes the home run to Freeman in the fourth. I mean, how locked in is this guy right now and really throughout the course of the entire season?
Incredible. And brave after brave player has said during the last couple of days, whether it's Ozzie Albies, whether it's Mark Melancon, that what we're seeing now on the national stage at the highest moments of the season is not that different from what they've seen from him all regular season long. And that's why, in their opinion, in the opinion of everybody in the Atlanta orbit right now, this is the MVP of the National League. And he's playing like it. Certainly for him, his first time in the NLCS, I think we're really getting a chance to see now, Jim, just what a brilliant player he is. He was, I think, at times overshadowed by other first basemen in the National League, whether it's been Albert Pujols early in Freddie's career, certainly more recently Adrian Gonzalez and Anthony Rizzo and Paul Goldschmidt. But now he is in the NLCS and on this grand stage, and it's the calmness and quiet of his approach. He almost never gets fooled. He's always balanced. He's got great power, a very smart hitter. Jim, he is a superstar at the peak of his powers, and the Dodgers, the mighty Dodgers, who we all thought were going to go to the World Series, are now just two losses away from elimination.
John Morosi joining us. I think most of us did assume that, and they're down 2-0. So, John, you mentioned Kershaw. When do you expect Kershaw to pitch, and then what kind of performance are you expecting to see from him coming off those back spasms?
Well, it's the key question, Jim, because you're right. It's not just getting on the mound. It's who is he once he is there. And I think overall Kershaw has gotten very little credit for the great playoff appearances he has had. He actually has 11 playoff wins this century, which is third most in the game. You don't think that maybe because of the struggles he's had at times, but he's actually got a pretty good track record in a lot of other moments. I think he'll pitch tomorrow. I do in Game 4. The leash may not be quite as long as the Dodgers would have hoped. They may need to have somebody like a Dustin May potentially in reserve. For Kershaw, if he has to leave early, but then you start thinking about the scenarios of, okay, if May has to come in and pitch in relief of Kershaw in Game 4, who starts Game 5? Because remember, there are no off days in the NLCS this year, and Walker Buehler, as we know, has been dealing with this blister. And so if Buehler can only ever go four innings when he's on regular rest, or maybe five, what could he do on short rest? So all of a sudden, this team with so much pitching depth
has a pitching shortage. And it really is a surprising turn of events, but they need Kershaw to be vintage Kershaw tomorrow simply because of the way they've managed the pitching situation and the way their other pitchers have performed.
Right, John? I was going to say, John Morosi joining us. You answered that in part, but I was going to say to you anyway, what do you make of that decision to pitch Dustin May for an inning and two-thirds in Game 1, and what does that mean for him for the rest of the series?
Well, Jim, that's a really important question, and I'm a little puzzled. I think overall, I'll take a step back and say, if Dodger fans are targeting Dave Roberts for their criticism here, I don't think that's fair, because I think a lot of the moves that Dave makes with pitching are done with heavy influence from the front office. That's just the way that the game is managed now. There's a lot of conversation there and a lot of optimizing of the data to make those decisions. But I do think at times the Dodgers, they're so smart. At times I think they have outthought themselves. And with May, I think that's the case. There's very little that I have issue with how they've handled things, but May is the one example. He pitches in relief in Game 1 of the Division Series, and then he starts Game 3 on a day of rest and pitches one inning. I don't get it. That did not seem to me to be the spot to use him there for an inning against the Padres in Game 3. Why not use a regular starter there, and then potentially you could have used May to have Game 1 of this series, and then you back Buehler off a day, and then your pitching is better rested to begin with. I didn't get that. Either he's a starter or he's a dynamic, dominant reliever that you're putting in high-leverage situations all the time, but they're trying to make them both at the same time, Jim, and it's not working. They're left with a lesser impact of someone that should be, frankly, one of their highest-impact players on the entire roster.
I think that's extremely well said, and I'm not sure who is fully responsible for that decision, whether that's part of groupthink. I don't think that Dave Roberts just makes that decision on his own, and I'm a huge Dave Roberts guy, but I agree with you. That makes no sense to me. I don't understand their use of him and why they put themselves in that position. John Morosi is joining us. John, let me jump over to the ALCS, the Tampa Bay Rays. Man, they're really something. They are rolling right now, and watching them last night, you see them make one great defensive play after another, one diving catch after another. When you watch this team, and in particular what they're doing in the field, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I'm saying that it's the 2015 Royals all over again, Jim, and we know how that series ended. They won the World Series that year, the Royals did. And just the excitement they're bringing. Dan Shulman, my friend and colleague, made this point that it really, they're a team right now, the Rays, that they're making defense fun. We don't often think about watching baseball for the defense, but I would tune in a game or go buy a ticket when we can do that again and watch this team play defense. They are so much fun to watch play defense. It feeds off each other like the Rays, like the Royals did back 5 years ago, where they almost wanted to one-up themselves in each other with a great play. Oh, you made a great play at shortstop. I'm going to make a great play at second base. I'm going to make a great catch in center field or right field. There's that passion and excitement to constantly make a great play, run to the dugout, and then say, hey, look what I just did, and look what you just did. It's just, they're having so much fun. It's an infectious way to play the game. And I think, Jim, a team that plays the way the Rays play, they're the perfect antidote to whatever criticism comes to the game about, oh, it's too slow or too boring. This is not a boring team. I defy anybody to watch the Rays and tell me it's a boring team. They're not. They don't score 15 runs a game, but it's excitement all the time. They're a great representative, I think, of the sport, and they're one win away now from the World Series.
Oh, they're not boring at all, and they're having a whole lot of fun. John, I'll say somebody who's not having fun, Jose Altuve. He does not look like he's having a good time at all. He's making costly errors when it matters most. How surprising has that been for you to see, and what's going on exactly with him?
Well, that's a great question, Jim. It's obviously concerning. Even Dusty Baker acknowledged his concern that perhaps Jose could be developing the yips at second base, which is obviously a very concerning situation. And we have seen careers derailed by that. And of course, it's only been a handful of games, so it's hard to diagnose it and say, well, it's going to be with him for a while. But we know, and we've seen it happen before in sports, that once those ideas and once that issue happens to a player, it can be really hard to get rid of it. It can take sometimes days, sometimes months, sometimes years. And we've seen careers derailed by it. That's just the reality. I hope it's not the case for Jose, because I've always enjoyed my conversations with him in the past. And it really is the kind of thing that can haunt an athlete. So let's hope for his sake that it's not something that's that's long lasting, and that he's able to get the help that he needs to kind of get through it. But it's a very onerous task, and I found it ironic, and on there is a positive, hopeful note of this last night, that Tyler Matzek, who got the win for the Braves, went more than 5 years between major league appearances, Jim. He had the yips as a pitcher. He was a first-round pick of the Rockies, got to the major leagues, and then lost the strike zone, couldn't throw a strike, and was treated by psychiatrists, psychologists, and eventually got himself back. And in fact, last year, Jim, he was pitching for an independent league team called the Texas Air Hogs in Grand Prairie, Texas. And that team plays 7 miles away from Globe Life Field, where last night he received and earned his first postseason victory of his career.
Amazing.
Live from Southern California, this is the
Garrett Ranton
Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Damn right it is, gang. What is going on, clones? That is right. Man, this feels good. It is so right. In fact, so right. What you're seeing and hearing is not a mistake. It's me, the most valuable and indispensable member of the XR4TI. Hell, the most valuable member of the entire show, I'd say. And I think we all agree on that, right? Welcoming you back to the Jim Rohn. The Garrett Ritt Show, right here on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Garrett Ritt Show.
As you can see, it's taken me only less than 2 years to accomplish what no other member of the show has been able to accomplish in more than a quarter century. And that's successfully engineer a full-on, hostile takeover of the big chair. Well, the side chair, but it still counts. It works. And I've got to tell you, be honest, it wasn't really even that hard. All I had to do was sit back there in the back row, keep my mouth shut, remain mostly invisible, upload one viral video, bust out one parody song, bust out a couple hot chocolates live on the air, and then absolutely crush my first, and until now, only other time on the air. As we heard last segment, crushed the hell out of that one. Then I just pump out a few kick-ass catchphrases, geniusly coerce Alvin to take a few Thursdays off, and boom, the Garrett Ritt Show is here. Bam. So, game on. That's it. So the genius of it all was that I actually brought my fake ID in to convince Jim we had the same birthday, of course, too, which got me into this chair again. So, game on, baby. It is now the Garrett Ritt Show, and we are going.
This is the Garrett Ranton Show.
That's right. And I'm not going to lie, I have played this thing to an absolute T. And to the victors go the spoils. So here we are. Here the F we are.
Here we are. Here the F we are.
And as a gift to you, clones, I'm going to take some calls here in a minute. So line them up. 1-800-636-8686. But first, because it is my birthday and it is my show, and because I'm the lone senior citizen on this program, I'm the most susceptible to COVID of anybody else here. I'm going to tell you a quick COVID-related story, so hopefully you'll dig it, because to me is the most embarrassing and infuriating story that I've gone through in a long time. So, I got an email recently from StubHub the other day telling me that a Garth Brooks concert that I got my parents' tickets for over a year ago had been rescheduled again. Now, this is the third time it's happened. I bought these damn tickets as a Christmas present for them over a year ago, and the show was just supposed to go down in May. But now it's been moved. It's been moved to June, it's been moved to October, and now finally it's been moved to April. And these are sweet-ass field seats in Bank of America Stadium, you know, where the Panthers play. We're talking 70,000 people, and they're 12 rows from the stage. I balled out for this one, got them tickets, right? Big bucks. And not only did I pony up for those, but because I was feeling it at the time, and because I know a little bit about how to do this kind of thing, I bought 7 other Garth Brooks tickets that I was going to hawk and turn around for some serious cash. This was freaking Garth, man, in North Carolina, one night only. I was going to make a killing until freaking COVID, of course. So I've been stuck with $700 worth of potentially worthless tickets for over a year now, and I have no idea when the hell that's going to play out. That's about a month's worth of Dr. Peppers for me. So that is significant to my bottom line. So the concert game sucks right now. We know this, right? So, but I'm here to tell you, what I did have was an amazing concert experience before the COVID ball dropped. And I mean right before the COVID ball dropped. We saw one of the last arena shows anywhere in the world before that Rudy Gobert coughed onto everybody's microphones and Tom Hanks went belly up as well. So Bruno Mars in Vegas, Saturday night, before the whole world shut down. Freaking ridiculous, right?
Kind of ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
And of course, the only reason we were even there that night was because 2 years ago, before that, we had tickets to Bruno at the Forum. The world famous Great Western Forum right here in LA, home of the Lakers, Kareem, Big Game James, Irv, Rambis. It's the home of Rambis. Never been there before. Could not wait. I had these tickets in my hand for nearly a year, right? So we go in. We had the tickets work perfectly. We get right through the ticket guy. No problem whatsoever. That'll come back up later. So we're in. Full hour early. We're having dinner there. We're getting some drinks, seeing the opening band. Everything beautiful. Mwah. Perfect night. Show starts, and we're about 90 seconds into the first song when an usher comes down and pokes me on the shoulder asking to see my tickets. Now, I don't know much, but I know that this is not a good sign. And even worse is when two other people are right behind him with identical tickets, and this one's on their Ticketmaster app, no less. So my hard tickets are looking pretty puny right about now. I didn't have a worry in the whole world that entire night until now. So they take me up to the security office. They ask for my tickets. I come back a minute or two later, and there's a big-ass Boyd right stamped on both my tickets. And two security guards are right escorting me out of the building. So as you can imagine, I'm horrified. And next thing you know, I'm out of there. I don't know how it happened. The tickets worked. What the hell? But they didn't give a damn. So I'm sitting there right in the middle of the parking lot looking and hearing Bruno Mars. So I'll leave it to you guys. Did I totally get screwed over here, or was I somehow in the wrong? I don't know. Have you ever been scammed like this before? It's just been like 3 years, and I'm still pissed about it, and I can't even listen to Bruno Mars on the radio without getting upset. So let's go to the phones. I'm going to go right to you guys. It's time for you guys to talk to me on my show, the Garrett Ryan Ritt Show. John, in New York, talk to me, brother.
Oh, my God. I have the privilege of being the first guest on the Garrett Ritt Show. Happy birthday, Jim, and happy birthday to you, Ritt. The man of the underdog has come to the forefront. Brian Weber, eat your heart out. I'm going to give the cones. I'm not going to be like Woody, my boy in New York. Hey, Woody, man, cut your call short. Get with the program. Garrett, happy birthday, and congratulations on your new show. And hopefully we'll see you all soon. Thanks, Garrett.
Love it. Thanks, John. You're the man. We're going right back to back. We're going, I'm a man. Your man. Everybody's man. Matt, right here in L.A.
October
talk to me, baby.
14th. 1890, number 34 of the fine 50, Mr. Garrett Ritt Eisenhower was born. The nation is a better place for it. Happy birthday, Jim Rome. Wore Ira Craig using empty paper towel rolls as telescopes, and wore Drizzle using a...
No! You do not wore anybody else in my segment. My segment. Love you, Matt. Can't do it, baby. Can't do it. Bring it on. We got anybody else on the phones? Anybody else lined up? All right. I think we got Andy. Andy in Rockland. Bring it, maybe. Call number 3 to the Garrett Ritt Show. Talk to me.
Hi, Garrett.
Oh, Andy. How are you? Lady Clones.
Good. How are you? Happy birthday.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm very, very proud of you. Seriously, I can listen to you all day. You're doing a great job.
I see. Does this sound like Andy?
This is Andy.
Andy.
You know what? You're doing a great job. I don't typically listen to the Jim Rome Show all morning, but I can listen to you all day. You're funny. You're doing a great job. And I don't really have anything else to say at this point. I just wanted to say happy birthday to you and Jim. And I think this is really... This is kind of a fun thing.
Oh, it's fun, all right. I don't know who it's more fun for, me or you, but I appreciate it. Again, I'm not 100% sure that was Andy or not. But, dude, I love it. Thank you for having me on the show today. Jim, again, thanks for having me here. Jim, you're the man. I appreciate the love. We're going to wrap up the segment right now, but I appreciate you bringing me in. making me one of your own on the most legendary shows in the history of sports radio. And even though I know you don't want to hear it, happy birthday, my man. And most of all, appreciate you keep my chair warm here until next year or tomorrow. Who the hell knows? I'll have my people talk to your people. And now, finally, cutting into my time as usual, here's what better be an award-winning sports update from the GOAT himself, the man with the pipes that live up to the hype, my man Rich Ackerman. Rich, take it away.
Sports Flash.
I make no promises. Happy birthday, All Day Ike. The Rays are one win away from going to the World Series.
What's your beef?
Is this the beef jerky segment?
It is now. Rex, good friends of the program. My guys at Old Trapper, great product, great company, family run. And they have provided us with a genius segment once a week where you get to call in with your beefs. I don't even care what they are. It can be sports related or not. You can call it. You can tweet it. Do whatever you want. Just come strong with a beef. What's your problem? What's on your mind? What are you beefing about? At Hitman Canadian, first one in. Quote, my beef is I'm being replaced by Garrett Ritt. Signed, Howard Stern.
Talk to me, brother.
I think Howard's fine. I think Howard's not going to sweat Ritt. Jim, I got beef with Jose Altuve. Can you throw the ball 5 feet and get an out? You're costing us another trip to the show. Sammy in H-Town. Yeah, that's not a good development. And again, once you get that, you can't always get rid of that, no matter who you are and what you've done prior to that. Jim, my beef is with Pete Carroll wearing a mask on the sidelines. You can't see him chew his gum. What's the point of watching the Seahawks now? Brent in PC. Dude, stick to the ATP. Craig Mo, 202-62-596, tweets, my beef is with my moronic friends who act all upset when a music legend passes when I've never heard them mention nor play their music. Hey, ass clown, name me one Van Halen song or shut the hell up. Matt at Shubrock 15, quote, my beef is with one-up guy. You know the guy. Anything you've seen or did, he has to top it with something. Freaking Ahola. You got something to say, Hawk? Put on your headphones. All right, let me read this before you say what you're going to say, because you look like he's got his hand up, like, teacher, call on me. At Chubrock 15 tweets, my beef is with one-up guy. You know the guy. Anything you have seen or did, he has to top it with something. Freaking Ahola. Do you have something to add, Adam?
We call that guy Keith Arnold.
We do?
We do.
Why?
Because that's Keith's MO. It was the entire time he was here. You mention anything, he's been there, he's done it, he's seen it. And it's a way better, longer story than you could have ever possibly imagined yourself.
All right, so with fairness and respect to the guy with the pepperoni nipples, I mean, was he right? I mean, if you went to tell a story about you, did he have a story that was better than your story?
If fictitious lies are better than my story, then yes.
You're calling the guy a liar.
Absolutely.
You just called Keith Arnold a liar.
And a felon.
That was gotten into you. Did you ever tell him or call bullcrap on his stories when he was doing you like that?
I would just turn and walk away every time.
But you didn't call him a liar the way you just did right here.
Well, no. I mean, Alvin can attest to this. When Keith would tell
Why
stories
around
here. Why are
you dragging Alvin into this? This
no,
is your
I'm,
take.
I'm not saying Alvin dude, thinks what I think. I'm saying Alvin has seen me call Keith a liar to his face many times.
Have you, Alvy? Dude, don't drag me into this. I'm Switzerland. I'm neutral. Why am I in the crosshairs?
Keith Arnold is
one-up
guy.
I'm not combative.
He always has been.
He what?
He is one-up guy. He always has been.
He's got a little bit of that in him, for sure.
I don't have big nipples. Like, let's be real.
All right. He can one-up you on nipple size. All right, so anyway, I think whether or not Keith Arnold is that guy, we all know that guy, right? You start to tell a story, and immediately it registers with that guy. Oh, I got a story. I got a story for you. Hurry up and tell yours. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. And they're not even listening to your story. They're waiting for you to stop. And the second you stop, they jump in. You're right. That's good beef. Let's see. Wagner says, my beef is with LA natives promoting KMET and KLOS when everybody knows 93KHJ had 85% of the LA audience in the late 60s. Regards, Sam Riddle, Humble Harv, The Real Don Steele, and Charlie Tuna. Hey, Wagner, how old are you, 90? Dude? Like, I listened to KHJ when I was a kid on an AM transistor radio. I'm not young, dude. And you're talking about the LA audience in the late 60s? Yeah, sorry, bro. Sorry I didn't reference AM radio. Now, actually, that was an amazing station. I did listen to KHJ when I was a kid. When I was a kid. Decades ago. Let's see. Alex, August the 3rd. Dear Jim, my beef is with Canada. They really want to wear a mask while wrestling with your significant other and no kissing. I will leave it there. Alex in Vegas. Bro, what do you care what they're doing there or how they get down or what props they use to get down? Like, dude, people are into things, man, that you would never believe or know about, and it's none of your business. What goes on behind closed doors is what goes on behind closed doors, man. What do you care? Garrett in Utah. Jim, our beef is with playing football. Signed, the Falcons. At Husker Rocker tweets, here's my beef. People that wear high water suit pants. You're not trendy. You just look stupid. I think he's directing that at you, Hawk. Rome, my beef is with those crappy little do not disturb signs in hotels that fall off every time I touch the door. Thank you. Greg. You're welcome, Greg. JJ Sportmo. My beef, Rit. Only got one segment on his birthday. He needs 1 hour. War, super confidence.
Love it. Thanks, John. You're the man.
Love it. Thanks, Amby. You're the lady clone. Hey, Jim, here's my beef.
Bring it, maybe.
Ike's taste in music. Bruno Mars. You went to a Bruno Mars concert by choice? Was Yoko Ono sold out? Was Creed stuck in Orlando making double plays? And now you can't listen to Bruno Mars on the radio. Man, I want that problem. Vince in Illinois. Well played, Vince. It's good beef. Hey, Rome. My beef is with Laker fans in their 20s flaunting their 17 world titles when they've only been alive for like 6 of them. That's like your dad giving you his company and claiming you've owned it for 50 years. Regards, Yankee fans. Francis in Glendale, long-suffering Clipper fan. Wore Ira Craig using Parmesan flakes as Lakers yellow confetti. Hey, Jim. You want to know what my beef is? My beef is that Garrett hasn't booked Garrett on the podcast yet. Happy birthday, boys. Bella B in Calgary. Rome Slice, I got beef with this studio chair not coming equipped with proper lumbar support and a donut cushion. Regards, Ike.
It's me, the most valuable and indispensable member of the XR4TI.
Ask him. Rit. Garrett Rit. The beef segment continues. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Detroit. Johnny in Detroit. Johnny, what's your beef?
Hey, Jimmy, my beef is with COVID canceling the Garth Brooks concert. Hey, but don't worry, Rit. You can still catch Garth Brooks performing on Pornhub.
Hey, Hawk, do you like working here?
I don't like that.
Because if you do, you wouldn't put calls like that up. Which of you two dopes screened that telephone call?
Uh-oh.
Rit. Rit, did he tell you that that's what he was going to do? Did you think that that would be okay? Or did you know that would not be okay, but you would think, or you thought that I would put that on Hawk?
Freaking ridiculous, right?
Anyway, Let's go to New York. Woody. Woody, what's your beef?
Jimmy, thanks for the vine. My beef is with the Rit Show for not running Rambling Rit with the Jaws music. Come on, man. Get it together. Out.
Woody, not happy about Rit. Look, it was his show. I promised him a segment. You don't give somebody a birthday present and then rip it right back while they're opening it. That was Rit. I knew what I signed up for. I knew what I was getting into. I was not going to end it prematurely or take back what I had bestowed upon him. His gift. Let's continue with this beef segment. I'm telling you, Twitter and social is way better than the calls to beef with. Somebody hit me up with a good beef on the phones. Let's try Houston. Joseph in Houston. Joseph, it's good to have you. What's your beef?
My beef is with my rocket, Rome. Every time I call into the show for the past couple of years now, she likes to call on waiting and gets upset with me because I don't answer her call. And she just sent me a text and said, you must be talking to your boy. What kind of bromance is this? And I'm sick of it, bro. Hey, man, happy birthday to you and Rit. Y'all have a blessed day.
You too, Joseph. Appreciate you. Thank you very much. Rack him with that
Thanks,
beef.
Joe.
First of all, I love that he referred to his wife as the Rocket. Here's my beef, Rome. My beef is with the Rocket. Whenever I call you, she's blowing me up. And I'm like, just text me if you need me. And her response is, what the hell? What the hell is with that bromance between you and your guy? My beef is with the Rocket. I like a guy referring to his wife as the Rocket. The Rocket's been blowing me up all morning. Jano the Rocket's been blowing me up with nice, sweet things. Like, I don't even want to tell you. She would be so upset if I were to tell you the kind of things that the Rocket, quote, the Rocket's been blowing me up with this morning. But she has been, in the best way imaginable, saying very sweet Jano-related things on my birthday. 1-800-636-8686. What's your beef? Hey, something else I'm doing on Rit's birthday, my birthday, Usher's birthday, John Wooden's birthday, Dwight Eisenhower's birthday, Stephen A. Smith's birthday.
Happy birthday, my man.
Thomas Dolby's birthday. Damn. Is there anybody in the world who was not born on October 14th? I'm doing a podcast. Buzz Williams, episode 147. I've got a prediction. It kills. He slays. Buzz is awesome. It's actually not a prediction. I've already taped it, so I know it's good. Rome, my beef is that I found out my dad is dead. Signed, Colin Hanks.
And Tom Hanks went belly up as well. So
Rita Wilson didn't want any of that. My beef is my husband is dead. I found out because I was listening to Rome or some old guy who was sitting in for Rome.
Good night now.